Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives in the world's leading global brands. Today, we're joined by Catalina Schweniger, who's the Chief People Officer at FutureLearn. Welcome to the show, Catalina. How are you?
Hi, Chris. Well, thank you so much for having me. I feel like I've made it to the Hall of Fame of HR. So, and good afternoon, good morning, and everyone else.
It's funny you say that because, like, I always say this to other leaders. I feel like I've stalked you on your journey. You know, before I started the company and I was at previous companies, I spoke to you when you was at Vodafone and when you was at, I think it was T-Mobile right before that as well. And here we are now, you know, having you on the show. So it's also just as surreal as me that every single time I have a guest on, there's someone that I've kind of seen or followed on LinkedIn. So it's really good to have you on the show. So I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. And it only tells, you know, let's not share that with the audience, but it's only telling about our age and the number of years we've been in the function. So let's not go there.
Let's not go there. Well, before we jump in, obviously, I would say congrats on a new role, but it's been, what, 8-9 months since you've joined. But how's it been, first and foremost? How are things? Obviously, you're in an office today, which is quite rare for me to have someone on a show in an office.
Well, I just came for you because I thought we'd talk about FutureLearn. So it would be great to be here in FutureLearn in the middle of Camden, enjoying social distancing, but seeing actual colleagues. It's been quite a journey. I joined in January and little did I know that I would join and then the pandemic would hit. But it's been an extraordinary 9 months. I'm very excited about the change in my career and the fact that I've joined an online learning platform in a moment when learning is on everybody's minds, right? So, it's been great.
What attracted you to the role? Obviously, in the past, you worked predominantly in like telecoms. You know, what was it that attracted you to FutureLearn?
Look, my last role before I joined FutureLearn in Vodafone was their global head of learning. And I myself, I think I have it on my Twitter account. I'm a passionate lifelong learner. I never, you know, I kind of set myself a goal that every year I have to learn something new. And when they approached me, I thought, that's great. It was about time after 20 years in corporates to start to experience working in a smaller company. And why I decided to join FutureLearn is because of the potential of this industry and the potential I saw in the company as a relatively smaller player in online learning compared to, let's say, our Silicon Valley friends. Mm-hmm. And also the potential to impact the company and to drive a cultural transformation as we're moving into being a global marketplace for learning.
Well, it couldn't be a better time, right? As you just said, obviously you didn't know the pandemic was going to hit, but have you seen a huge increase on the platform?
Obviously I didn't see that coming. I think we've been one of the industries that, you know, that was impacted. Obviously I can't say that, you know, obviously a lot of people gone through a lot of hard times in the last month, including us. You know, we got people who suffer from COVID, lost loved ones. But overall, the industry benefited from the fact that people were locked down with less time spent on commute and more time for their own development and learning. So we saw a quadruple increase of traffic on the platform. And we got to 14 million active users. And we saw courses like, you know, we were kind of the first ones to build a course with the London Institute of Hygiene and Tropical Diseases on COVID and the pandemic. And we were literally building that course as the pandemic was kind of building, right? We saw hundreds of thousands of learners going on that course. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a surreal experience, but we felt so so privileged to be, you know, one of the contributors of, you know, feeling that kind of need to focus on their own personal development and need for kind of normality in these times when people mm-hmm. indeed spend much more time developing their skills and learning new things.
It's so interesting, right? Because so many of my friends, families, colleagues, when I was speaking to them through all of this, all of them had refound new hobbies or new passions and new projects. And, you know, all of a sudden there's now, you know, their health and well-being is now a priority and they're exercising every day. It was quite incredible to see it. People take a step back for a second and say, you know, what is a priority for me right now? Where do I want to be? And how am I going to invest in myself? And took the time to do so because they were, well, one, most people didn't have any other choice because there's nothing else to do because it was a great opportunity. And others, it was kind of a reality check of like, what is my purpose? Where do I want to be in this world? And how do I want to contribute to that? So.
Exactly. And I think they say that it takes about 4 months to build a new habit. And luckily, although obviously the pandemic is still there, right? We're still confronting with this reality. But let's say we're seeing that we are kind of over the peak. But, you know, luckily, as we did with our fitness routine, I think we developed a new muscle and a new habit of investing more in our learning. So we're seeing this consumption continuing to be up there, right? Which is, mm-hmm. I think, a positive. Now, if this crisis taught us something, to take more care of ourselves, of our kind of health, as well as our kind of mental agility and upskilling.
Mm-hmm. You obviously, the title of the show, which is a great one that you came up with, is the knowing doing gap. You know, why learning is now the hottest asset in HR. What do you mean by the knowing doing gap? Explain that to everyone.
I think obviously we all understand that, you know, learning is great for you because, you know, you maintain that learning agility. We're taught how to learn and acquire new skills from early on. But I think right now the shift in learning, in corporate learning, if maybe I refer to my old role in Vodafone, is moving into learning something that, you know, is based on an outcome, right? So we will probably, you know, have 3 or 4 careers in our lifetimes and we need to reskill and upskill ourselves. And I think the focus on learning now, the trend is focus on output. You know, are you learning a new skill or are you just informing yourself, right? So I think it's the shift from consumption of learning for the sake of learning to actually focusing on learning something, going deeper and acquiring a new skill. And that takes a skill in itself, the skill of learning. I think there's a lot of great books out there and courses. I think Professor Barbara Oakley is one of the gurus in this space of learning how to learn, right? But focusing yourself on actually acquiring a new skill. And I think building a new skill takes, you know, 4 months, 6 months. It's not something you do on a flight. It's not something you do just by reading a tweet or a blog. And that's, I think, corporates are working really hard on driving these programs or getting people back to, you know, revisiting their skill set, acquiring new ones. And also because they have to, you know, it's interesting, right? Although in the whole world, in UK as well, there's unemployment is starting to kick in. For key critical skills, there's still a skill gap, right? So I think people like us, like other companies, will have to reskill and upskill our employees and stop kind of acquiring talent for that matter, right? So that's what I mean by, you know, this shift from learning something deeper so that you can apply that skill and do either a new job or your current job, but better, right? Or to the next skill level. So that's, I think, one of the trends that I'm seeing and one that we at Future Learn also are very excited about because that will create even more demand for, you know, reskilling in digital, but also in creative arts, in other areas, not necessarily just in coding or in data and analytics.
One of the things I've always struggled with, and I'd love to hear your perspective on it, is I almost learn, this can sound really crazy to listen, learn too many things and focus on too many different things, and I end up not executing because all I'm doing is consuming.
I totally agree. I think one way to hone the skill is to apply what you learned. And a second way, which is probably what you're doing by, you know, having this podcast, is teaching what you learn. I think one way to retain that new memory and to apply that skill is doing this too in combination. And I agree, I'm the same. I'm kind of encyclopedic. I get a lot of interest in different areas. But in the last year, I kind of consciously decided to focus on on neuroscience and the science of learning. And I thought, okay, I'll go deep in this and the rest is just nice to have. But it requires discipline and it requires indeed you time to set time aside and to apply what you've learned. And obviously, if you can't apply because of this type of the work you're doing, you at least try to teach others, you know, share that with your wife or with your friends.
Yep.
And this will help you retain that information and ultimately that will be, you know, sticky.
It's a really good point you make because I used to say that and I just didn't even realize that until you said it. When I used to be a dance teacher. And
wow.
Great dance teacher. And one of the things I always used to say is people, whenever I would teach, I would get a sense of mastery because not only have I learned it myself, but every day I'm teaching it to the students and it would ingrain it even more in my own brain. And I realized the power of not only am I teaching people it, but I'm also getting better by constantly mastering it myself, by going at the repetitions that I'm going through. And I didn't realize at the time how powerful that was. So yeah, it's an interesting look at it. If you teach it, then you're also ingraining it more in your own mind, right?
Here you go. Hopefully an HR podcast on dancing techniques.
You imagine.
I'll sign up for that.
Imagine HR, a masterclass. That would be interesting on LinkedIn Live. What you mentioned neuroscience. What are some of the things that you've, the trends that you've seen there, or things that you've, big takeaways that you've learned and you've tried to apply in the organizations that you've worked in?
I think I learned neuroscience more for my own soul, right? And for my kind of curiosity of learning. But there's some really interesting study. Again, neuroscience is, you have a very version of neuroscience for dummies and things for us. We're not trained as, let's say, in the medical profession, and there's some kind of deeper neuroscience. So if I go on a kind of level for all, there's some really interesting things of how the brain and the memory works in you know, techniques on chunking and learning, right? Things about mental flexibility. And, you know, there is this kind of myth around, you know, talent, you know, you're born with talents. And actually a lot of neuroscience is teaching you that, no, you know, you can train yourself to get smarter and to retain more memory. There's obviously, there's an interjection between neuroscience and learning. I think one thing that struck me, you know, I'm kind of the age when, you know, I'm starting to not have the great memory that I used to have. But study shows that actually, thanks goodness, our memory is not great, because imagine if our brain would remember every single thing, every single stimulus that you get in the day, we go nuts, right? So actually, memory loss in parts is not that bad. It's just a way of our brain to adapt, right, and have the capacity to learn more things. So again, I think, again, neuroscience has a lot of applications in learning. And if you look at learning styles and how people, you know, dissect information, what they do with it, you know, memory retention and so forth, there's a lot of great studies around there. And I mentioned Barbara Oakley. There's other books around the subject that, you know, I could recommend people to go into, even if you're not becoming an expert in neuroscience, which I'm not planning to.
We had a few people on LinkedIn ask if you have any advice around knowing if individuals have absorbed the knowledge, and then if they have applied it, how have you measured that in the past?
That's such a good question, because I think L&D practitioners all over the world struggle with, you know, how you measure impact of learning. When are you seeing the ROIs? And obviously in the old school, you would measure how much learning you consume, or training, or how many hours you spend, and how engaged you are, how many likes you gave, what was the NPS score. And I think now more than ever, it's all about, okay, have you applied those new skills in your job, and are you making an impact? So can we actually measure business outcomes? An example is, if you are in a squad where you work, you know, in a new software release, and it's maybe eight of you, every single individual matters a lot in the, you know, successful release of that product. And if I'm a junior data science, you know, contributing to that squad, I'm upskilling myself, and I'm going from a level one, you know, very junior, to a level two, my impact on that squad is maybe three times or four times, just because I'm able to add that, you know, extra knowledge that I have, and get, you know, to a successful release, maybe more so than other colleagues who are more junior than me, right, in that particular skill, right? So I think, you know, the ability to demonstrate a business impact with the skill that you have acquired versus others that are probably not at that skill level with you, it's probably one of the better measurements of, do you actually know what you're doing, and can you show that in results? Because also a lot of people, you know, we also are, you know, we're probably learning new things, but our companies, you know, or our, let's say, communities don't get any, you know, advantage of that, right? You're not applying those, and you're not contributing on anything. I think the second, when you can measure that contribution and impact on business outcomes, that's when you've said, okay, now I've graduated the skill level, right? I can demonstrate the ROI.
Have you seen any good examples of companies that have been able to keep track of that and being able to understand these are the skills that exist in their organization, and giving them a good kind of understanding of the talent they have and that they can allocate within the organization?
I think it's interesting. You know, companies now have developed a new function that sometimes sits in HR, sometimes sits in the business. That's kind of the future of skill function, right? And it's a bit of looking in the crystal ball, but it's also kind of database research on what are the next skills, you know, where is technology taking us, and are we ready for that? Because to your point, 10 years ago, obviously, you didn't have this technology to do these podcasts, right? You learn new skills because technology evolves, and you had to kind of evolve with it. And probably your job spec right now is completely different than it was 10 years ago, right?
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Because how technology advanced. And yeah, our company is great at that. I think we're getting there. I think, you know, the L&D function is being disrupted because, you know, all of us are becoming, you know, we have to be experts of skills versus experts of creating great content and bite-sized learning and great user experience and, you know, kind of Fitzpatrick and all of that good stuff. All of that is kind of the old skills, even of the L&D function. Now L&D has to be all over the theory and practice of skills and how you measure them, right? And what are they? And, you know, skills are very tangible and very technical. Obviously, you have attributes and you have values and you have all the kind of soft skills, which are obviously super important. And you can also measure them through psychometrics and so forth. But technical skills are super important. And, you know, the reality is that most kind of traditional L&D teams don't have these skills. You know, at Vodafone, we saw that in my team, I had a mix of HR professionals, but actually business experts. So especially in technology, we had people who had the technology background. And that made a lot of sense, you know, combining kind of L&D skills with business skills made a lot of sense. And I think that's kind of one of the shifts that we're seeing in the function. And that's why I'm saying, you know, learning is becoming a hottest asset because kind of coining this concept of skilling and upskilling delivers so much value to enterprises. And HR, obviously, and L&D is at the core of that.
You mentioned when we first spoke, the learning in the flow. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I can't take credit for it. I think I need to give credit to George Bursin. You know, we probably had on your podcast some time ago, but I think Josh coined that the term and is now becoming kind of, you know, something that everybody talks about. So what is really learning the flow is learning on the point of need. If I tell you right now, Chris, go and learn something, that's not in the flow. I'm disrupting you. You probably have something else to do. You probably don't need that skill right now. But I'll give you an example. Obviously, I'm with the cool kids now, so I'm using the Google Suite. But back in the days when I was using Microsoft 365, which I love, by the way, don't tell anybody. You know, there's an example of that. You know, I was trying to change a master, you know, change the number of a slide in a master document. And when I searched how to do it, the change happened by itself, right? I didn't have to go have a pop-up menu. I didn't have to type in anything. It just happened. I learned a new skill and I learned in the flow. It wasn't disruptive. It was seamless, right? So, you know, obviously, again, technology can help do that. So let's say you and I are going to a meeting about blockchain and we probably have no idea about blockchain, right? But we have to look like we are kind of, we know what we're talking about, right? So in an ideal world, our Gmail suite or our Microsoft suite would actually prompt us with a pop-up, you know, maybe half an hour before the call and send us a couple of good articles about blockchain, right? We wouldn't have to look for that. We would just get them, right? And we really need that information so that we don't make a fool of ourselves in the meeting with an expert, right? So that's kind of working, you know, in the point of need where you actually need to quickly know about something or, you know, get maybe more than kind of basic information about something that you get it there and then when you need it the most, right? Versus, oh, I'm going to block an hour today to learn something new, which is still great, right? But that's not in the flow. That's something that you do, an activity that you do. And as you said, you might not apply what you learn, so it's a bit of a waste of time, right?
What, one thing I want to talk about is you created a recent course, didn't you, as part of On Future Learn around how to recruit online, which is that right?
Yeah, I think we're very excited. I was privileged to be able to work with some of my friends from the recruitment and employer brand industry. And what we did this is, look, we're a smallish company and we're really, really privileged the fact that we grew during this difficult times, and we were able to continue to hire people. Most of the people we hired in the last 6 months, we never met, actually, none of them. We realized that, goodness, this is a new skill again. You know, how do you assess online? How you make sure it's a cultural fit? How you make sure you don't, you're not biased and you hire people who look good on camera, right, and give good answers? And I think that prompted us to reach out to some experts. We reached out to actually Recruitment and Employment Confederation, to Neil Carberry, who also blogs and podcasts every day. And together we created this course with industry experts with very, very practical tips on, from the attraction point of employer brand in a crisis, to an online assessment, to using Zoom or, you know, or whatever other video means to assess people, to how you create culture on online as well, how you make sure that they get adjust, they get a feel of the company, what kind of culture you have, you know, without taking them to the coffee machines and to, you know, the water cooler conversation. So, exactly. We created this course and it's live as of the 14th of September, but it's open for enrollments. And it's free, right? Unless you want to upgrade. So we're really excited of giving that back to the community. And you know, we also, as we were producing this and talking to the likes of IBM or GSKs and Vodafone, companies where, you know, privileged to have a kind of a sophisticated tech stack and all of this technology. How about smaller companies, mom and pops, who don't know how to work with technology? And, you know, so we try to keep it super real and simple, you know, kind of demonstrated that you can have a great candidate experience and still have robust assessments on a shoestring. And, you know, as long as you have a phone and you can record the video or you can go on a FaceTime live, you can actually replicate that kind of face-to-face experience online and still get good quality hires. So yeah, we're excited to do that with Rec, and we're starting now advertising this. Actually, go on Future Learn and search online recruitment and onboarding. Well,
what were some of the takeaways? Because I'm sure everyone listens like, great, tell us more.
So look, I think practically not all the companies were ready to, you know, with a kind of a video of the office environment online. So such a pity, right? Because then you go, everybody's in lockdown and you can't actually show the people the office environment. And a lot of us are attracted to that, right? You want to be getting, you know, how it feels to be in the office, how the people look like, you know, what's the coffee like, right? All of these things contribute to the decision of, you know, accepting or an offer or not. So those were the things. Things that we also commissioned some research because we were worried that maybe unconscious bias would creep in even more. And maybe diversity and inclusion will be impacted. We actually did some research and it looked like recruiters felt that, you know, they were maybe as biased as they were before, no more. But what we found is that most recruiters felt they were not ready to shift online, right? They weren't trained and skilled enough. So that was interesting. Our worry of you know, maybe more bias online was kind of busted. I think one of the experts on the course, Karina Govinji, was saying that actually, you know what? If you have a video interview versus a one, you know, face to face, you might be less biased because we don't have too much time to warm up to each other and like each other, right? Because it's, you know, we've got 45 minutes, you have a list of questions, you know, you're very structured, right? So kind of the positive bias, maybe it's limited because there is no that kind of time. We'll have a bit of coffee and we realize that we went to the same school or we both play rugby, right? So that was one of the findings. And the third, I think that the building culture online was one of my biggest takeaways. I think Ruth Penfold, who's at Launchpad, which is a startup incubator at BP, showing some really great examples of how they do that, how they create a whole environment and go the extra mile for new hires. And she talked a lot about how they get more learning in the beginning, how they create this community, how they have access to mentors early on. And that's a great example of you can still build culture by not having people face to face, right? So yeah, those are kind of the themes. It's 3 weeks of learning, I think, in total, depends on your learning style, anything between, you know, 4 or 5 hours in total. So I think it's worth doing just to learn from experts and maybe get some new tips.
Yeah.
Will be here to stay, right? It's not this virtual hiring and onboarding is not going anywhere for now.
What does the user experience look like in the course? How, what does that look like in terms of the process? Because that's something people are really struggling with.
Yeah, I think, as you said, there's different type of learners. So we try to combine different type of media. You know, some people like to read. So you have articles, you have videos, you have audio. It's very interesting. I always thought the video is the most catchy, but not with our learners. I think really? They're more engaged with audio. They tend to click next more on video. So again, another myth that's busted by data. But maybe it's just kind of our learners' data. So it has a combination of this. But I think what's very powerful is social learning element. So you learn as much from each other than you learn from the experts or from the educators on the course, right? So there's a lot of opportunities where learners share their own experience, interact, have a dialogue. And sometimes they take that offline and they continue the dialogue. It's a bit like the Facebook experience where you like and comment on each other's comments. And we encourage that dialogue a lot because, you know, as you said, it's more practical. You learn from other practitioners, you share ideas and examples. And I think we don't pretend to be, it's not a CIPD type of university type course. It's made by practitioners for practitioners with very practical tips, a bit of theory here and there, but mainly kind of examples. You know, here's three examples on how you do it. You might find a course that's applicable in your company.
Yeah, well, people definitely prefer that more, right? where do you see the future of learning in kind of in terms of HR's role? Because obviously, you've got the learning function, you've got HR. Where can HR add the most value and influence the learning, skills gap and learning in your organization?
Look, I think with technology and the rise of all these great platforms like FutureLearn and others, learning is much more self-directed, right? We are professionals, we're kind of intelligent people and know where to find our learning. I think where HR plays a huge role is facilitating that transfer of knowledge, that mentorship, coaching in a structured way. Because as we know, as we just talked about, you know, you learn from others like you, you learn from your peers, you learn from your bosses. And I think HR there in the background should facilitate and invest in that. And secondly, as I said, I think we need to get better at the future of skills. I'm not sure how that would look like other than, you know, keeping studying and learning from others and keeping abreast with all the trends and all the McKinsey reports and the George Burson reports, but kind of anticipating what the next skill is and where we kind of start already today bridging the gap for tomorrow. Those will be probably two things that HR should do in learning. And I think being braver and hiring more people who are not from HR into learning and getting business, you know, excited about, you know, in learning. I'm seeing in corporates, actually, it's very exciting. You know, some companies have decided that the CLO is now a direct report of the CEO. Or it's kind of a key, you know, we used to have a transformation officer, right? Mm-hmm. You know, data, I think it's also being elevated, but now equally learning is being elevated, which only shows the importance of kind of the, you know, the skills economy.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I'm seeing that more and more now. You know, only a few years ago, it certainly wasn't the case. As well. So definitely on the rise. Well,
nobody in HR wanted to be in L&D, to be honest, in the past, right? When I was kind of cutting my teeth in GE, there wasn't even the choice of career path, right? It was kind of, you were doing it a bit on the side. Yeah, it was something you're doing on top of development, but it wasn't the thing. And now it's actually, you know, it's now huge, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, exciting times. And you couldn't be in a better place. And no wonder you joined FutureLearn. You combine both passions, right?
Yeah, that's in the name, right?
It's in the lane. And also you're giving your background experience, passions. I can tell why you joined the business. But before we wrap up, I'm going to jump into our quick fire round. So I'm going to ask you five questions. And you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers.
All right, let's go for it.
Are you ready? You know, what was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior HR learning leader? What were some of the biggest challenges?
Well, I think I'm pretty self-confident person, but sometimes maybe I lack that. I always thought that, you know, executive presence and being very articulate and very in the moment, you know, was not my thing. So I learned to overcome that and I kind of taught myself to build that. And I think early in my career, I was struggling with that.
What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
Surround yourself with smarter people, you know, both in people you hire, but also people you work with. That's the way you will actually, you know, better yourself, be on top of your game. And, you know, don't, you know, worry about jumping into things that you don't know. And, you know, this is how you learn faster.
definitely fail forward. What's some books or audiobooks that you'd recommend to our audience and why? Doesn't have to be HR or obviously or learning, any book that you'd recommend.
Well, I love Harari's books. So I think I've listened to them a couple of times. Excellent storytelling. As I said, I'm a big fan of the science of learning how to learn. So I think there's two books that I read recently. One is Mind Shift and one is Mindset. So both of them fantastic. Again, they're written by professors who are experts in the science of learning and neuroscience.
Perfect. We'll link them in the description for everyone. And in terms of resources, what are some of the other resources that you use? What are your go-to online learning resources? Like FutureLearn, obviously. What are some of the others that you kind of turn to as your kind of portal or resource?
I'm very active on LinkedIn and Twitter, where I get a lot of my bites every day. And I follow practitioners, peers of mine that I admire, and kind of industry thought leaders, the evergreen Dave Ulrich or George Burstein. Again, listen to a lot of podcasts like yours. And again, get my inspiration from the peer network. I think that's, they don't cease to impress and inspire me every day.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same, by the way. That's my answer to everyone. I just look to my network and try and surround myself by those and be lucky enough to surround myself with those people as well. And then last question, what's one thing about your organization, FutureLearn, that you're most excited about?
I think we're excited about the future because obviously nobody could have predicted the pandemic, but it only taught us what a huge gap and opportunity there was in digital learning. And the opportunity that lies ahead with having more relevant content, more, great partners on the platform and the instrument we can be to help the world to reskill and upskill themselves, especially when, a lot of us less fortunate have to change careers and are unemployed right now. So that kind of strong purpose we have in transforming access to education and helping people around the world to, build a new career, build a new skill. That's why I'm super excited about the next period.
Well, look, thank you again for taking the time out to join us and going into the office to join us. I really appreciate that. And before we kind of wrap up, if people want to reach out to you and say hello, where's the best place for them to get in contact with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn and on Twitter with, C. Schwenninger, and you can reach out to me on catalina@futurelearn.com as well.
Amazing. Well, look, I'll let you go. Enjoy.
Cheers.
Enjoy
the weekend. Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you again soon. Okay.
Have a great weekend. Thank you, everybody.
See ya.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye. Bye.